All right, ready to dive into another fascinating case. This one takes us back to the golden age of drive-ins, but with a twist. Think shattered dreams and soggy land.
You got it. And a legal principle that's still shaking things up in commercial real estate. We're talking about caveat emptor.
Let the buyer beware. Right. And the case that brings all this to life is Anderson Drive-In Theater v. Kirkpatrick. A 1957 case that's full of valuable lessons for anyone dealing with commercial leases, even today.
Absolutely. It really highlights how crucial it is to understand the fine print and, well, maybe check the soil before you sign on the dotted line.
Okay, so picture this. It's the 1950s. Drive-ins are all the rage. Anderson Drive-In Theater, they've got big plans. They signed this 25-year lease with a farmer, Kirkpatrick, for what they think is the perfect spot for their cinematic oasis. But there's a problem.
Yeah, a bit of a snag. The land isn't exactly what they had in mind. Turns out it's basically a swamp, totally unsuitable for building anything, let alone a drive-in.
Talk about a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
So what did Anderson do? Did they just accept their soggy fate?
Not exactly. They cried foul, claiming Kirkpatrick knew about the swampy conditions but didn't say anything. Anderson argued this was a deliberate attempt to mislead them, potentially even fraud.
So we've got a drive-in with dashed dreams, a farmer who might have been a little too quiet, and a whole lot of mud. What did the court have to say about all of this?
Well, this is where caveat emptor, that Latin phrase meaning let the buyer beware, comes into play. The court basically said, look, Anderson, you had the chance to inspect the land before you signed anything. You didn't, so you deal with the consequences.
So no happy ending for Anderson Drive-In. Seems a little rough, especially if Kirkpatrick suspected the land was a swamp all along. Is that really fair?
It's not about being fair or unfair. It's about upholding this principle of caveat emptor in commercial transactions. The court emphasized that Anderson had every opportunity to do their due diligence. They could have inspected the land, even done soil tests, but they didn't.
I see. So silence, in this case, really was golden for the farmer. But where do you draw the line? What if Kirkpatrick had outright lied about the land? Would that have changed things?
Now, that's where we shift from caveat emptor to the issue of fraud, and the court made a very clear distinction. Simply not saying something isn't enough to prove fraud. You need more than just silence. You need solid evidence of deliberate deception.
So, like Kirkpatrick specifically saying the land was dry, or maybe even actively hiding evidence of the swamp.
Exactly. You need proof that he intentionally misled Anderson, not just that he didn't volunteer every little detail.
So, for all our lawyer friends listening, this case is a big reminder that proving fraud requires more than just a hunch or feeling that something's off. You need concrete proof that someone was deliberately dishonest.
Absolutely. And this case also shows just how important due diligence is in commercial transactions.
Right. Don't just take someone's word for it. Inspect, investigate, ask tough questions, and get everything in writing.
That's the lesson Anderson Drive-In learned the hard way.
So we've got this swampy situation, a legal battle, and some key takeaways about caveat emptor. But this case happened way back in the 1950s. How relevant is it in today's world, especially with technology, online listings, virtual tours? Has caveat emptor changed with the times?
That's the big question, right? Does this old case about a drive-in and a swamp still hold any weight today? I mean, things have changed a lot in the world of real estate.
Yeah, it's not the 1950s anymore. We've got technology, online listings, virtual tours, the whole nine yards. So has caveat emptor kept up with the times?
Well, the short answer is yes, it's still very much alive, but it's definitely evolved over the years. While Anderson Drive-In set a pretty high bar for proving fraud, courts have realized that caveat emptor can't be a one-size-fits-all principle, especially when it comes to what we call latent defects.
Latent defects, what are those?
Basically, hidden issues that a normal inspection might not catch. Think like hidden structural damage, maybe some environmental contamination lurking beneath the surface, or even zoning problems that could throw a wrench in a tenant's plans.
Ah, I see. So these are problems that you wouldn't necessarily notice just by walking through a property.
Exactly. And in these cases, courts have sometimes made exceptions to the strict buyer beware approach, especially if a landlord knew about a latent defect but kept it quiet.
So there's a difference between a landlord just not knowing about a problem and actively trying to hide it.
Big difference. And that goes to the idea of good faith and fair dealing, right? Caveat emptor encourages buyers to do their homework, but it doesn't give sellers a free pass to be shady or hide crucial information.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But what are those as-is clauses you see in leases? Doesn't that basically shift all the risk to the tenant? Like they're accepting the property, warts and all, hidden problems included.
That's a common misunderstanding. While those as-is clauses are intended to allocate risk, they don't mean landlords can just conceal known defects and get away with it. Courts have been pretty consistent in saying that as-is doesn't protect a seller from liability if there's fraud or intentional misrepresentation involved.
Okay, so even with an as-is clause, a landlord can't just sweep problems under the rug and hope the tenant doesn't notice.
Exactly. An as-is clause might protect a landlord from things they genuinely didn't know about. But if they knew about an issue and hid it on purpose, well, that's a different story.
This brings up an interesting point about technology. I mean, we live in a world of online listings, virtual tours, drone footage. Has all this digital stuff made it easier or harder to claim ignorance? How has it affected this whole caveat emptor thing?
Oh, that's a debate that's going on right now in the legal world. Some argue that all this online information actually strengthens caveat emptor. Tenants have more ways than ever to research a property.
So they should be held to an even higher standard of due diligence.
That's the thinking. But on the other hand, you could also say that all this online information can be really selective, maybe even misleading.
Yeah, like those virtual tours that make a tiny apartment look huge.
Right. Critics of this expanded caveat emptor idea argue that online information can be very carefully curated, potentially hiding the real story. A virtual tour might show you a beautiful kitchen, but conveniently leave out the leaky roof or the foundation problems.
So it's this weird gray area where technology gives tenants more tools to do their research, but also maybe makes them more vulnerable to hidden problems or misleading presentations. How are courts dealing with this? Are they leaning more toward protecting buyers or sticking with that strict buyer beware attitude?
It's a tough question, and the law is still evolving. Some courts are taking a stricter approach, emphasizing that tenants can't just rely on online info and still have a responsibility to do thorough in-person inspections.
So even in the age of the internet, that old advice to kick the tires still holds up.
Absolutely. Online research is great, but it's not a replacement for actually being on the property and seeing things firsthand. Courts are starting to recognize that those online descriptions and virtual tours can be carefully crafted to show a property in its best possible light, which isn't always the whole story.
Makes sense, but let's be real. Not everyone has the time or the know-how to do a super detailed inspection. How can tenants protect themselves in a world where information overload can be just as bad as not enough information?
That's a really good question. I mean, we've talked about legal precedents, the evolution of due diligence, all that. But at the end of the day, you've got real people making real-world decisions with these commercial leases. And that's where ethics have to come into the equation.
Right. It feels like we're moving beyond just contracts and legalese and into this gray area where things like fairness, transparency, good faith, those things matter as much as what's written in the lease itself.
Absolutely. And this is where caveat emptor, while important, doesn't always give us the full picture. It's about the ethical obligations landlords and tenants have to each other. What's legal isn't always the same as what's ethical.
So even if a landlord isn't legally required to disclose something, could there be an ethical reason to do so? Especially if it's something that could really impact the tenant's business, like a duty to do the right thing, even when the law doesn't force them to?
Exactly. Imagine a landlord knows the plumbing is about to go kaput, but the lease doesn't specifically say they have to mention it. Legally, they might be in the clear, but ethically, that's a disaster waiting to happen for the tenant.
It's almost like there's this unspoken agreement, this understanding that both sides will act in good faith, even if every little detail isn't spelled out in the lease.
That's the idea behind the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. It's a concept that exists in a lot of contracts, leases included. It basically means both parties are expected to be honest and fair, even when the specific terms of the contract don't cover a particular situation.
So even if a landlord can technically get away with not disclosing something, doing so might go against this broader duty of good faith. Are there potential legal consequences, even if they haven't technically broken the lease agreement?
Sometimes, yes. Courts have found that not disclosing a major problem, even if it's not legally required, could be a breach of this implied covenant. So even if caveat emptor protects a landlord from a fraud claim, they might still be held liable for violating this duty of fairness and transparency.
That's a big takeaway for landlords. It's not just about staying within the letter of the law. It's about doing what's right and building trust with tenants.
You got it. Building a good reputation matters, and that comes from ethical behavior. Being transparent and communicating openly can prevent a lot of headaches, avoid legal battles, and just create a better environment for everyone involved.
So transparency is key. legally and ethically. But how much transparency is enough? Does a landlord have to point out every little scratch and dent? Or is there a line somewhere? How do you balance caveat emptor with this expectation of good faith?
That's where it gets a little fuzzy. There's no one-size-fits-all answer. But a good rule of thumb is to disclose anything that a reasonable tenant would want to know. Anything that could significantly affect their decision to lease the property or their ability to use it the way they intend to.
So it's not about what the landlord thinks is important. It's about what a reasonable person in the tenant's shoes would want to know. That makes sense. But what about the tenant's level of experience? I mean, we've talked about how commercial tenants are generally held to a higher standard of due diligence. Does that change how transparent a landlord needs to be?
That's a great point. Obviously, the more sophisticated the tenant, the more resources they probably have to investigate and look out for their own interests.
Yeah.
But even in a deal between two experienced business entities, basic ethical principles still apply. A landlord shouldn't take advantage of a tenant's perceived sophistication as an excuse to be less transparent.
So even if a tenant is a big corporation with a whole legal team, the landlord still has an obligation to be honest and upfront. Ethics are a two-way street, even in the world of commercial real estate.
Absolutely. And this brings us back to the heart of our discussion today. Caveat emptor is an important legal principle, but it doesn't give anyone a free pass to act unethically. Transparency, good faith, fairness, these are the things that should be at the core of every commercial lease deal.
Well said. This has been a really insightful deep dive. We've gone from a dry van sinking in a swamp to the challenges of the digital age, exploring the nuances of caveat emptor, the evolution of due diligence, and why ethics matter so much.
It's been a fascinating journey, and I think the biggest takeaway for me is that while laws change and technology advances, the foundation of any solid business relationship is trust, and that trust comes from honesty, transparency, and a commitment to being fair.
Couldn't agree more. So, to all our listeners out there dealing with commercial leases, whether you're a landlord, a tenant, or an attorney, remember this. Caveat emptor reminds us to be careful, but it's ultimately a call for everyone to act ethically and responsibly.
Great way to wrap things up. Thanks for joining us on this exploration of Anderson Drive-In, caveat emptor, and the ethical considerations that shape the world of commercial real estate.